Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge you who may care about or care for or have become someone with a disability. Disrespect welcomes today to the show Frank Havercat, the owner of Havercat & Associates and a certified mold inspector. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We're here to explore some issues regarding mold in general and disability in mold. Now, why don't we set some ground rules? What's the taking off point for problems with mold and people's health?
In a normal house that doesn't have a mold issue, you will be breathing in mold spores.
Right.
The difference, though, is in a normal environment, in a normal home or even outside, you have what's called a broad spectrum or a broad fungal ecology. And what that means is you've got thousands of different species at very low numbers that you're inhaling. We've become accustomed to those as we've evolved as human beings, and it doesn't seem to pose a problem for the most of us. Now, the problem that you have with a building that has sustained water damage and remained damp for a certain period of time is that you can get a mold growth scenario that is not normal, that has a significant amount of mold spores or an amplification or increase over outdoors. And typically, you tend to get mold that has some toxicity to it, and you're breathing in mold spores at a much higher rate with much higher toxins than you would ever get by gardening.
Right. What makes the mold toxic?
Well, it's the species itself. It actually uses toxins to battle each other out in nature. And in a normal environment, they keep each other in check. The problem is with drywall or wood or insulation or any of the cellulose materials, building materials that we're using in the last 20 years or so, we have created an environment where certain species of molds can thrive in that condition, and they will create what are called mycotoxins, which are chemicals that are attached to the spore, and when you inhale those spores, you get a variety of health problems depending on how many spores you inhale and what kind of species it is.
So these mycotoxins are designed to provoke an unfavorable response in other living entities, and
Correct. And
that includes humans.
And unfortunately so, and biological warfare applications come from mycotoxins from mold in some cases. The bottom line is they are from mycotoxins from mold.
So they can be very potent.
Extremely.
When should someone become concerned about mold, and should they be more concerned with a disability or particular disabilities?
Well, the problem with depends on what kind of disability that you have. Generally, a healthy individual that has a non-compromised immune system will probably react a lot later to a mold infestation than someone that has allergies or that is having a certain illness that has affected his immune system. They will be reacting to mold a lot sooner. It can be as simple as recurring flus or colds or ear infections, eye infections, skin rashes, nosebleeds. I mean, the list is very long. And it tends to affect individuals differently across a broad spectrum. But people that are usually the very young or the old or that are immunocompromised will react a lot sooner than healthy individuals. So it depends a little bit on the disability that these people have.
I note that you don't say people won't react. Is that the variable in people's reaction seems to be more time of exposure, but that given sufficient exposure over sufficient time, most people will react.
Oddly enough, a lot of our clients call in and say, well, I've just been tested and I have a mold allergy, so I want a mold test in the house. Well, whether you have a mold allergy or not isn't really the important factor. It just means you're going to react a little bit sooner than someone that doesn't have a mold allergy.
And maybe more strongly for a given length of time.
Well, sure.
Okay. Is it generally true that mold requires water to propagate?
It does. It needs two things. Well, it needs more than two things, but it needs two main things. One is it needs moisture, whether that's water coming in through the outdoors, through seepage, through foundation walls, or through a roof, or through a plumbing leak.
Yep.
Or you can get also humidity and condensation, which will create dampness of materials, and the material needs to be cellulose in nature. So what that means is the paper backing on drywall within the wall cavity is a prime example of that.
Yeah.
Or wood or even dust is cellulose in nature, some fabrics and carpets and so forth. So generally, if concrete and steel gets wet, and as long as those areas are clean and not with a lot of settled dust, very little mold can actually grow because there's nothing for it to eat.
Yeah. Air conditioners, they can be a source of water that's not obvious because the water's contained in the air conditioner, but the mold can grow there too, can't it?
Yes, especially in condominiums, the cooling coils, if they have a lot of dust on there, then again, the dust is the food source, and the moisture, if the condensate tray doesn't drain properly or there's a lot of dust buildup, and then you could have mold build up there, or in any home that has air conditioning on the cooling coils, you can have issues there as well, because just the nature of the whole process of air conditioning, it creates moisture.
So even a room unit could be a source of mold if it were not cleaned.
Correct, and even sometimes room humidifiers can be a source, or even dehumidifiers for that matter. Anywhere where water could touch a cellulose material like paper, cardboard, wood, fabrics, dust, then you could have a mold issue.
People with respiratory disabilities would be probably among the worst affected. I know from my own interviews with people and my own personal experience that metabolic-related disabilities probably react unfavorably with mold, so that people who, for one reason or another, as you say, are immune compromised, will become more immune compromised, and either their immune systems would be overactivated or they'd be suppressed, would suffer more. I mean, the symptoms of their disability, if it comes from an immune abnormality, would be worse when the immune system is challenged. If there's a change in immune activity,
correct,
for the better or for the worse, the symptoms would get worse.
Correct.
And this would affect people with MS or people with chronic fatigue and probably all kinds of...
Or any lung disease, yeah.
Yeah, well, for sure, lung disease. But I'm thinking things like lupus and Crohn's and what... So when should someone become concerned? So we're not trying to scare people out here. But.
No, and the media sometimes can blow things a little bit out of proportion, and they report on black mold, and I get a lot of calls from people that say, oh, I've seen black mold. They need to realize that mold usually looks black. Because it's black doesn't necessarily mean anything. You really don't know what kind of mold it is until you get it under a microscope and look at the different shapes of the spores themselves and the colors and the number of spores that you're looking at in a cluster.
So identify the type of the mold is important.
In some cases, what you actually need to identify is where you have the mold infestation. I also have a lot of competitors that when they do assessments, they immediately start taking samples of the visible mold, which is fine if it's a legal case where we have to prove that the spot on the wall was indeed mold. However, as far as the assessment itself, it's fairly useless information.
Really?
Yeah, it is. What you really got to look at is, what are you breathing in? If you're going to have a health result from mold, you have to be breathing in the spores. So more important would have been air samples to see what is in the air, what are people breathing in, and that'll also tell you what kind of contamination that you're looking at. Or you can take wall cavity samples which means drawing air from behind the water-damaged wall to see if there's a result for mold.
Right.
The actual species themselves become important only if there's a legal case or if there are severe health issues where you're trying to trace back if this indeed could come from mold. But the removal process, whether it's a toxigenic-type mold or a moderately toxic mold, really is the same. So once I find the mold, I'm no longer that interested in what it is. The trick with the laboratory sampling is to find hidden issues. That's really what the laboratory sampling is for.
So to find mold that may not be easily visible. And you can track it? You can track it from an air sample?
Well, it's if there's a sufficient amount of mold, especially even hiding behind the wall, it usually produces spores in the air.
And now for a short break from our interview. You've been listening to Certified Mold Inspector Frank Havercat describe mold removal and the link between disability and mold.
So you find the spores in the air, but now you're surrounded by four walls, a floor, and a ceiling, and no obvious water damage. What's the next step?
Well, that's where we have a little bit of a leg up, so to speak, on other people. We've got a certified mold detection dog that we would bring in, and she'll mark exactly where that spot is. And we also use thermal imaging cameras to help us out in what areas are still actively wet that may not appear wet,
right?
Like wet insulation behind drywall. And we use a variety of other instruments that will tell us the level of contamination in certain areas where we can then narrow it down to, is it the ceiling, floor, wall, which wall is it, how much of a contamination are we estimating, so that we can, in our reports, direct the contractors that are now going to do the work on how to set up containment and where.
So the process of dealing with this mold would start with a recognition of symptoms such as you described that might point to mold, and then would proceed to what, a visual inspection, and then a possibility of a requirement for air testing, as you've
From a visual perspective, you're going to learn very little. Usually what I recommend when people are concerned about it is if they have a history on the house through several years, is ask them, have you had any water issues? Has anything ever gotten wet that didn't get dried out properly right away?
Right.
If the answer is yes, then there's a possibility for a mold situation. If they're having health issues that get better when they're away from the house, then
yes,
that's definitely a trigger that would warrant going through an assessment. But visually, since all the stuff tends to hide behind walls,
yeah,
a visual inspection is going to turn up much more than the client already knows. I mean, most of our clients are intelligent enough to figure out whether the spot on the wall is mold or not. You really don't need an expert or pay an expert to come in and look at it with you and tell you it is a piece of mold.
So when you find these health issues that either go away when you leave the house or that relate to what you've described as symptoms of mold and you're concerned about them, the next step from your point of view is an assessment. You bring in the air samplers and maybe the dog?
Yeah, well, we would bring in the air equipment, the thermal imaging cameras, the dog, and just see what information we can get from all these instruments and the dog itself. And then after that, we would do a plan on where we're going to sample and how, and send those air and wall cavity samples off to a laboratory and look at the results, and then we'll know if it's a mold issue or not.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, for a listener who's living in rented premises, someone comes along, does a test well or not, who either has a relationship with the landlord or is beholden to the landlord, and maybe they have the equipment, but maybe they don't know how to use it, maybe they do. They come up with results, the landlord says, well, we're going to wash your walls, we're going to replace your carpet, and we're going to vacuum your furniture, and your mold problem should be gone. This is what CMHC says. Is that good advice for people who have normal immune systems? And is it good advice for people whose immune systems may be compromised? Is it, in fact, good advice at all?
Well, it's hard to say. Each case is unique, obviously. In some cases, if you have a little bit of mold that's there, in a shower enclosure because the room isn't vented very well and it's considered a topical growth issue, meaning it hasn't really impacted the wall, yeah, then washing the walls and cleaning it up, as long as it's a small area of growth of, you know, a little bit of speckles here and there and doesn't amount to too many square feet, no more than two or so, then certainly that could be cleaned up, and you don't need to use bleach or chemicals or anything like that.
Right.
However, if it involves cleaning a substantial wall area of several, square feet or 10 square feet or more, or and opening a wall cavity suspected of mold growth, then that's not good advice at all, because there is a potential for spreading that growth, that may be a small issue in one wall, to the entire room, if not the entire home.
So something else that's not contaminated could become contaminated and a source of future mold.
Unfortunately, we see it all the time where, homeowners will not want to pay the expense of a mold remediation contractor to remove drywall that has visible mold on it. Because, that is not inexpensive. It's several thousand dollars to even do a small job, and they'll
right.
get an ordinary contractor to do it or do it themselves, and then all of a sudden they start to get health issues, and then they have a proper assessment done, and we find that they've contaminated multiple areas in their contents, and now they're looking at a price, tenfold of what it would have cost to do it properly. And now they have no choice because they can't live in the home. They can't take the contents with them because it's contaminated. It'll contaminate the next site, and they really don't have a choice at this point, which is certainly a position I'd never want to find our clients in, but unfortunately, every now and then, we do find that situation.
Okay.
And landlords, it's they're always motivated to do it the cheapest way. And in some cases, insurance contractors as well, because the insurance company isn't paying them properly in some cases, and they'll start removing wet building materials that have been wet for a certain amount of time, and unfortunately, they make the mold issue worse.
Yeah. For somebody with a disability, is the procedure different than for someone with a normal immune system?
No, I would say the procedure should be the same. The ultimate goal is to get the room or the area where the problem is back to a normal condition, which is never mold-free, but indicative of a normal outdoor environment or other rooms that have not been contaminated. So whether someone is immunocompromised or young or elderly or not, it really shouldn't matter. It's the process that should be done properly, period.
There should be one process for everyone, and it should be a comprehensive and complete process that resolves the problem first time for all time.
Correct, yeah.
Is there anything you'd like to tell someone listening about the work that you do, the help that you can give, and anything about a constructive response from someone who's concerned about mold?
Well, I think the main thing is don't panic. Too many things go wrong when people panic. I would say get your information. There's lots to learn online. There are some sites that give you good information. There are some sites that unfortunately give you outdated information or incorrect information. But it's don't treat it like it's the Ebola virus and you need to do something about it right now, because that's when things go wrong. I'd almost rather see mold left in place for weeks or months at a time than removed improperly in a rush, because that's when you're going to make the problem bigger and your potential for severe health exposure increases. So, if the water damage has just occurred,
right,
then obviously time is of the essence to dry it out, to avoid a mold issue.
Yeah.
But once you already have the mold issue, the panic to remove it can sometimes cause bigger issues. So I would say, research the people you're going to have to do the assessment. Don't rely on the cheapest quote in the visual inspection, because that's not going to tell you more than you already know. And research who it is that's going to be doing the removal, and they should treat this like it's an asbestos problem, meaning
right,
it's not good enough to just cut out the stuff that's black and then leave. It needs to be dealt with properly, and the air needs to be cleaned, and all surfaces need to be cleaned of spores. So even a small mold problem will take several days. If someone can do a mold issue within a day, you're probably looking at the wrong contractor.
Okay. Are there qualifications you should look for and insurance coverage that you should look for in a contractor?
Well, the insurance is one thing, but I would say qualifications, they should definitely be certified through either the IICRC or the American Indoor Air Quality Council. Anything else or other association out there that I just think are substandard.
Is there any way that somebody can save money on something like this if they're on a fixed income due to disability, or their responsibility is limited, say in a tenant situation?
It's that's where the situation gets very tough with mold, because we have a lot of clients that just can't afford to do it properly, and that's when it gets really difficult, because with mold, there aren't very many shortcuts that you can take to do it properly.
Right.
And each case needs to be assessed on a case-by-case basis. In some cases, if they're handy enough, there may be contractors out there that may rent them the equipment and show them how to do it to save some money, although they really need to know what they're doing to do that. It really...
You're talking about removal.
I'm talking about the removal, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time with us today.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
And to explore this, you have a website, don't you?
I do. Actually, we've got several, but the most interesting starting point would be the Mold Dog site, which is www.molddog.ca or molddog.ca.
Thanks again, Mr.
Great.
Havercat.
Thanks very much.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Certified Mold Inspector Frank Havercat describe mold removal and the link between disability and mold. In the middle of the show, you heard Pete Johnson and Let Him Jump from the album Hey Piano Man. Coming up, Big Maceo, Chicago Breakdown from the Encyclopedia of Boogie Woogie.
You can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. To find out what we plan for the show, go to www.calendric.com/disrespect. That's C-A-L-E-N-D-R-I-C. www.calendric.com/disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.